Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in 1962 that the BBC banned which song? Was it A, Perry Como's Catch a Falling Star? Was it B, Bobby Boris Pickett's Monster Mash? Was it C, Elvis Presley's A Whole Lot of Shakin' Going On? Or was it D, Peter Paul and Mary's Puff the Magic Dragon? 1962, Banishment by BBC. Which song was that anyway? And question number two, it was on this day back in 1975 that the TV show Saturday Night Live was broadcast for the first time. Who was the first guest host for that first broadcast? Was that A, John Travolta, B, George Carlin, C, Robert Redford, or D, Clint Eastwood? The first guest host of the first broadcast of Saturday Night Live, 1975. Who was that, anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of October the 10th. Lots of musical transitions, including both comings and goings. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1813, that composer Giuseppe Verdi was born. He composed 26 operas. And by the way, it's also composer Ralph Vaughan Williams' B-Day today as well. He was born on this day back in 1872, and he's known for such compositions as The Lark Ascending. And it was 28 years ago today, 1997, that John Denver was killed when the plane he was piloting crashed into Monterey Bay, California. He was 53 years old. Finally, it was 56 years ago today, 1969, that the Paul is Dead craze began when a radio DJ played the Beatles' Revolution No. 9 backwards. Miranda Lambert's Platinum introduces our country music news. It's written by Miranda Lambert, and it's a review of Lainey Wilson's new album, Country Legend in the Making. This is from Time magazine on the 13th of October, 2025. I'm a huge fan of Lainey Wilson. I heard just a few songs and instantly loved what she is doing. She's such a light. She's funny and she's fun, and she has a spirit about her that brings joy to any room she walks in. Knowing her off the stage and on, I feel like I'm looking at the same person all the time. Now that's pretty rare. What she doesn't define her. when she is, and what she is defines her, and that's really authenticity. She lives and breathes songs, and you can see that she has that person in her eyes. It's all about the music for her, and she lets the music lead. She's a legend already, having taken home her first Grammy last year for Bell Bottom Country, and I'm thankful that she's a country artist. I'm really proud of how she represents the lifestyle we both love and the music we both love. She's put on the gate and she's out of it, going 100 miles an hour. Lambert, by the way, is a Grammy-winning musician. Chris Botti performing Nessun Dorma introduces our classical music news. Ranked the greatest opera composers of all time. Here are the best opera composers of all time from the 16th century to the modern day. This is written by Freya Parr, September 9, 2025, BBC Music Magazine. Many composers have turned their hand to opera, from Handel to Kanye West. But who are the composers who have shaped this theatrical form into what it is today? Originating in Italy at the end of the 16th century, opera has attracted composers from all styles and backgrounds. Although Italy remained the epicenter of the European opera world for quite some time, there have always been composers in other countries making waves. Schütz in Germany, Lully in France, Purcell in Britain, and more recently, Missy Mazzoli, Philip Glass, and John Adams in the U.S. While this may not be an exhaustive list of the greatest opera composers, it's a good place to start for those who are new to the art form. The top 10 discussed in this article, coming in at number 10, Henry Purcell. Number 9, Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. And number 8, Gioachino Rossini. Number 7, Claudio Monteverdi. Number 6, George Friedrich Handel. Number 9, Giacomo Puccini. Number 4, Leos Janacek. Number 3, Richard Wagner. Number 2, Giuseppe Verdi, and coming in at number 1, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, 1759-91. Mozart's genius in opera lies in his unparalleled combination of musical mastery and dramatic insight. He could create unforgettable melodies that perfectly capture character, emotion, and situation, whether in the playful cunning of The Marriage of Figaro, the tragic nobility of Don Giovanni, or the sublime innocence of The Magic Flute. His orchestration is always precise, supporting singers while enhancing drama, and his ensembles, especially finales, revolutionized how multiple characters interact musically on stage. Beyond technical brilliance, Mozart's operas resonate with timeless human psychology. Love, jealousy, ambition, and folly are portrayed with wit, empathy, and emotional truth. No other composer balances technical virtuosity, dramatic intelligence, and sheer musical beauty so consistently. For accessibility, sophistication, and enduring impact, Mozart remains the undisputed pinnacle of operatic art. And in music research and technology, why Tim Henson believes that learning everything by ear is the best thing aspiring guitarists can do. This is published in Guitar World by Janelle Borg, 26th of September, 2025. Tim Henson has emerged as one of the most authoritative voices in the contemporary guitar scene. He says, "We sell our tablature. It's one of the things that helps us pay our bills, and I think it's a great tool and a great helper," he tells Music Zoo's Tommy Coletti. "But for the young guitar players who want to play guitar, learn it by ear. Just learn everything that you can by ear. And if you want to get the tab afterwards to double check, and maybe if there's something that you were struggling with that you couldn't get just right, sure, do it. But learn it by ear. That's going to be the most important thing for any musician, is to just be able to hear it and to play it." Henson's advice is informed by his own experience switching from violin to guitar and learning guitar by ear, which he saw as an escape from the rigid confines of classical music. "I started playing violin. Before I started playing guitar, I started playing at the age of 3. I can sight read violin pretty well. When it comes to reading sheet music for guitar, I don't even really know where all the notes of the guitar are, because I learned to play by ear. And because, for me, violin was so rigid, and it kind of killed any sort of love for music. It made me hate music," he continues, "because especially in classical music, you're essentially just doing cover songs all the time. There's no room for creativity. And when I picked up the guitar at 10, I saw it as an escape from that." A guitar luminary who might not necessarily agree with Henson's advice is Corey Wong, who just a couple of months ago asserted that players can't call themselves advanced guitarists unless they can ace one specific test, knowing where all the notes on a guitar are. The Beatles' I Am the Walrus introduces our rock and pop music news. McCartney dead? Inside the 56-year-old Beatles hoax that shocked fans. This is written by Lucille Barilla, 21st of September, 2025, Parade Magazine. In 1969, the Beatles were the most influential band in the world, dominating charts and shaping pop culture. That same year, the infamous Paul is Dead hoax emerged, sending fans in a frenzy and sparking decades of rumors about Paul McCartney's supposed death. According to the website On This Day in Music, it was reported worldwide that McCartney had died in a car accident in Scotland in late 1966. Allegedly, the band covered up the death by using a lookalike for public appearances, and the rumors surrounding his demise began gaining traction around September 17, 1969. In a time when newspapers were the primary source of information, rumors about McCartney's death spread rapidly, prompting the New York Times to debunk the claims on November 2, 1969. The newspaper wrote, "The fantastic death wish seems to have been stimulated by a University of Michigan undergraduate named Fred Labour, who did a record review in the college paper of the Beatles' latest album, Abbey Road, in which he expounded in length on the elaborate clues indicating that McCartney had died and been replaced by a stand-in." The Times also noted that Detroit DJs fueled rumors by pointing to supposed clues in the Beatles' lyrics and album covers. The Times concluded that this was, quote-unquote, the most stupendous and elaborate hoax in history. In the late 1960s, the Beatles' cryptic album, Art and lyrics such as those found by fans in Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band provided fertile ground for conspiracy theorists. The band's willingness to let the rumor persist allowed the hoax to flourish. But despite official denials, including a Life magazine interview with McCartney, the rumor persisted for years. It ultimately became a significant part of pop culture history. Life magazine found Paul McCartney in Scotland, enjoying some quiet time as a family with his wife Linda and their children Heather and newborn Mary McCartney. As the hoax lingered in the press on both sides of the Atlantic, Paul said, "Perhaps the rumor started because I haven't been much in the press lately. I'm happy to be with my family, and I will work when I work. I was switched on for 10 years, and I never switched off. Now I am switching off whenever I can." By the way, several online sources lie in the lyrics of the song that opened this article, I Am the Walrus, as evidence of Paul's death and his look-alike replacement. And in local music news, an article titled, "At 58, She's the Oldest but Proudest Horn Player in the NC State Marching Band." And this is published in the News and Observer on the 29th of September, 2025, by Josh Schaefer. With a gray ponytail poking out of her marching band hat, Lois Reggie raises her horn in the air and blasts out the Wolfpack fight song, making more noise as a 58-year-old mother than the teenage fans bouncing around the stands in their red and white overalls. In a band of 400, she easily qualifies as the most senior musician, old enough to be a freshman's grandma, but she blows her mellophone with the fury of a first chair band nerd. The revelry inside Carter Finley Stadium can be deafening as fireworks erupt, cannons bang, and fans roar uninterrupted over four quarters. But Reggie only adds to the youthful noise. There were a few kids who didn't know what to think, she said. But we went to a bowl game, and I rode the band bus and stayed in the hotel. At one point, I was napping on the bus, and they snapped a picture and put it on Instagram. I thought, okay, I'm in. Reggae joined NC State University's storied marching band, the Power Sound of the South, last season when she started graduate school in accounting, having spent her career in finance. With her children both in college, she craved an empty nest diversion, excited by the possibilities of new freedom. Honestly, I don't think I'd know what to do with myself, she said. There's nobody in the house but me and my dog. Reggie grew up in Chicago and chose the French horn as a fourth grader, taking to its tiny mouthpiece and elaborate tubing like a young wizard choosing a wand. I was this tiny, scrawny person, she said. For whatever reason, I thought these instruments looked cool. Like many teens of her era, Reggie experienced a far less intense version of marching band. In the 1980s, it was common for high school bands to attract 40 or 50 half-hearted players to wear hand-me-down uniforms and march sullenly in place while butchering whatever Michael Jackson song was popular that week. But as her own children veered into high school band life, Reggae discovered a new vigor that seeped into the elective. Suddenly, there were competitions and weekend travel and choreography, and she fished out her own mellophone and marching French horn. Then, as a brand new Wolfpacker, she decided to toss a band hat back into the ring. She practiced her scales, first for 5 minutes a day, then for several hours. Then she checked her email every half hour for a week, waiting for word that finally came. And with that, she started preseason practices that lasted all day. It's very, very physical, she said of the routines. I'm a runner. If I weren't a runner, there'd be no way. As a first-year player, Reggie surprised a few unsuspecting people, notably when she went to collect her uniform. They were like, "No, we need your student to do this," she recalled laughing. But she fit easily into the band's ranks, having a pair of college-age musicians as children. Now in her second year, she fits in seamlessly, marching sideways through the halftime show, which on Saturday night involved both the Superman and E.T. themes. For more fans, far more fans, stayed to watch than one might think, with beer and hot dogs in close proximity. For Reggie, the thrill comes not so much from playing in front of 50,000 people, so many that she can sometimes hardly hear her own playing. It comes from playing alongside 400 people, one horn and a big red coat roar. In her uniform, nobody knows she's the only player out there to make a mortgage payment or have a hire a plumber. Or sit on the parent side of a parent-teacher conference. They know, said Reggie, that I'm just a big kid. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in 1962 that the BBC banned which song? Was it A, Perry Como's Catch a Falling Star? B, Bobby Boris Pickett's Monster Mash? C, Elvis Presley's A Whole Lot of Shaking Going On? Or D, Peter, Paul, and Mary's Puff the Magic Dragon? Correct answer? Answer B, Monster Mash, banned by BBC back in 1962, today. As noted on 28 October 2017 in bbc.uk.co, the reason for the ban was that the song was, quote-unquote, too morbid. Massachusetts singer Bobby Pickett wrote novelty song Monster Mash in 1962 to spoof dance crazes such as the twist and the mashed potato that were prevalent at the time. With lyrics like "It Was a Graveyard Smash," the BBC failed to see the funny side and banned the song for being too morbid. Though it made number one on the Billboard charts in the year it was written, the offending novelty hit didn't chart in the UK until 1973, a decade after its release, when it went to number three. By the way, as noted in AmericanSongwriter.com, Peter, Paul, and Mary's 1963 hit Puff the Magic Dragon was banned for its alleged references to drug use, when it was really about the loss of innocence and a childlike imagination of an imaginary friend. And the answer to our second question? It was on this day, back in 1975, that the TV show Saturday Night Live was broadcast for the first time. Who was the first guest host of that broadcast? Was it John Travolta? B. George Carlin? C. Robert Redford? Or D. Clint Eastwood? Correct answer? That would be comedian George Carlin. As noted in OnThisDay.com, Janice Ian performed on that first show with her hit song at 17. And Billy Preston played his hit, Nothing from Nothing. So, let's close out today's program with Nothing from Nothing. So here's Billy Preston to play what he did at that first Saturday Night Live broadcast. Nothing from Nothing. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Content of this program intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure. Tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.